Chapter 33. The Dark Waits. Under a leaden sky, the high-wheeled cart bumped east along the Camlin Road. Rand pulled himself out of the straw and back to look over the side. It was easier than it had been an hour earlier. His arms felt as if they might stretch instead of drawing him up, and for a minute his head wanted to keep on going and float away. But it was easier. He hooked his elbows over the low slats and watched the land roll past. The sun, still hidden by dull clouds, yet stood high overhead, but the cart was clattering into another village of vine-covered, red-brick houses. Towns had been getting closer together since Four Kings. Some of the people waved or called a greeting to Chaim Kinch, the farmer whose cart it was. Master Kinch, leathery-faced and taciturn, shouted back a few words each time around the pipe in his teeth. The clenched teeth made what he said all but intelligible, but it sounded jovial and seemed to satisfy. They went back to what they were doing without another glance at the cart. No one appeared to pay any mind to the farmer's two passengers. The village inn moved through Rand's field of vision. It was whitewashed with a gray slate roof. People bustled in and out, nodding casually and waving to one another. Some of them stopped to speak. They knew one another. Villagers mostly, by their clothes. Boots and trousers and coats, not much different from what he wore himself, though with an inordinate fondness for colorful stripes. The women wore deep bonnets that hid their faces and white aprons with stripes. Maybe they were all townsfolk and local farm folk. Does that make any difference? He dropped back on the straw, watching the village dwindle between his feet. Fenced fields and trimmed hedges lined the road, and small farmhouses with smoke rising from red brick chimneys. The only woods near the road were coppices, well tended for firewood, tame as a farmyard. But the branches stood leafless against the sky, as stark as in the wild woods to the west. A line of wagons heading the other way rumbled down the center of the road, crowding the cart over onto the verge. Master Kinch shifted his pipe to the corner of his mouth and spat between his teeth. With one eye on his offside wheel, to make sure it did not tangle in the hedge, he kept the cart moving. His mouth tightened as he glanced at the merchant's train. None of the wagon drivers cracking their long whips in the air above eight-horse teams, none of the hard-faced guards slouching in their saddles alongside the wagons, looked at the cart. Rand watched them go, his chest tight. His hand was under his cloak, gripping his sword hilt until the last wagon lurched by. As that final wagon rattled away toward the village they had just left, Matt turned on the seat beside the farmer and leaned back until he found Rand's eyes. The scarf that did duty for dust, when need be, shaded his own eyes, folded over thickly and tied low around his forehead. Even so, he squinted in the gray daylight.
"You see anything back there?"
he asked quietly.
"What about the wagons?"
Rand shook his head and Matt nodded. He had seen nothing either. Master Kinch glanced at them out of the corner of his eye, then shifted his pipe again and flapped the reins. That was all, but he had noticed. The horse picked up the pace a step.
"Your eye still hurt?"
Rand asked. Matt touched the scarf around his head.
"No, not much. Not unless I look almost right at the sun, anyway. What about you? Are you feeling any better?"
"Some."
He really was feeling better, he realized. It was a wonder to get over being sick so fast. More than that, it was a gift of the light.
"It has to be the light. It has to be."
Suddenly, a body of horsemen was passing the cart, heading west like the merchant's wagons. Long white collars hung down over their mail and plate, and their cloaks and undercoats were red, like the gate tenders' uniforms in Whitebridge, but better made and better fitting. Each man's conical helmet shone like silver. They sat their horses with straight backs. Thin red streamers fluttered beneath the heads of their lances, every lance held at the same angle. Some of them glanced into the cart as they passed in two columns. A cage of steel bars masked each face. Rand was glad his cloak covered his sword. A few nodded to Master Kinch, not as if they knew him, but in a neutral greeting. Master Kinch nodded back in much the same way, but despite his unchanging expression, there was a hint of approval in his nod. Their horses were at a walk, but with the speed of the cart added, they went by quickly. With a part of his mind, Rand counted them.
10, 20, 30, 32. He raised his head to watch the columns move on down the Camlin Road.
Who are they? Matt asked, half wondering, half suspicious.
Queen's Guards, Master Kinch said around his pipe.
He kept his eyes on the road ahead.
Won't go much further than Breen's Spring, unless they're called for. Not like the old days.
He sucked on his pipe, then added,
I suppose these days there's parts of the realm don't see the guards in a year or more. Not like the old days.
What are they doing? Rand asked. The farmer gave him a look.
Keeping the queen's peace and upholding the queen's law.
He nodded to himself as he liked the sound of that, and added,
Searching out malefactors and seeing them before a magistrate.
Humph! He let out a long streamer of smoke.
You two must be from pretty far off not to recognize the queen's guard. Where are you from?
Far off, Matt said at the same instant that Rand said, The Two Rivers.
He wished he could take it back as soon as he said it. He still was not thinking clearly, trying to hide and mentioning a name a fade would hear like a bell. Master Kinch glanced at Matt out of the corner of his eye and puffed his pipe in silence for a while.
That's far off, all right, he said finally. Almost to the border of the realm. But things must be worse than I thought if there's places in the realm where people don't even recognize the Queen's Guards. Not like the old days at all.
Rand wondered what Master Alvir would say if someone told him the Two Rivers was part of some queen's realm. The Queen of Andor, he supposed. Perhaps the mayor did know. He knew a lot of things that surprised Rand. And maybe others did too, but he had never heard anyone mention it. The Two Rivers was the Two Rivers. Each village handled its own problems, and if some difficulty involved more than one village, the mayors, and maybe the village councils, solved it between them. Master Kinch pulled on the reins, drawing the cart to a halt.
Far as I go.
A narrow cart path led off to the north. Several farmhouses were visible in that direction across open fields, plowed but still bare of crops.
2 days we'll see you in Camlin. Least it would if your friend has his legs under him.
Matt hopped down and retrieved his bow and other things, then helped Rand climb off the tail of the cart. Rand's bundles weighed on him, and his legs wobbled, but he shrugged off his friend's hand and tried a few steps on his own. He still felt unsteady, but his legs held him up. They even seemed to grow stronger as he used them. The farmer did not start his horse up again right away. He studied them for a minute, sucking on his pipe.
You can rest a day or two at my place if you want. Won't miss anything in that time, I suppose. Whatever sickness you're getting over, young fella. Well, the old woman and me, we already had about every sickness you can think of before you were born, and nursed our younglings through 'em, too. I expect you're past the catching stage, anyway.
Matt's eyes narrowed, and Rand caught himself frowning.
Not everyone is part of it. It can't be everybody.
Thank you, he said, but I'm all right. Really. How far to the next village?
Carysford, you can reach it before dark, walking.
Master Kinch took his pipe from between his teeth and pursed his lips thoughtfully before going on.
First off, I reckoned you for runaway prentices. But now I expect it's something more serious you're running from. Don't know what? Don't care. I'm a good enough judge to say you're not dark friends and not likely to rob or hurt anybody. Not like some on the road these days. I got in trouble a time or two myself when I was your age. You need a place to keep out of sight a few days? My farm is 5 miles that way.
He jerked his head toward the cart track.
And don't nobody ever come out there. Whatever's chasing you won't likely find you there.
He cleared his throat, as if embarrassed by speaking so many words together.
How would you know what dark friends look like? Matt demanded.
He backed away from the cart and his hand went under his coat.
What do you know about dark friends?
Master Kinch's face tightened.
Suit yourselves, he said, and clucked to his horse.
The cart rolled off down the narrow path, and he never looked back. Matt looked at Rand, and his scowl faded.
Sorry, Rand. You need a place to rest. Maybe if we go after him...
He shrugged.
I just can't get over the feeling that everybody's after us. Light, I wish I knew why they were,
I wish it was over. I wish...
He trailed off miserably. There are still some good people, Rand said. Matt started toward the cart path, jaw clenched as if it were the last thing he wanted to do, but Rand stopped him. We can't afford to stop just to rest, Matt. Besides, I don't think there is anywhere to hide.
Matt nodded, his relief evident. He tried to take some of Rand's burdens, the saddlebags and Tom's cloak wrapped around the cased harp, but Rand held on to them. His legs really did feel stronger.
Whatever's chasing us, he thought as they started off down the road. Not chasing. Waiting.
The rain had continued through the night they staggered away from the dancing cartman, hammering at them as hard as the thunder out of a black sky split by lightning. Their clothes became sodden in minutes. In an hour, Rand's skin felt sodden too, but they had left four kings behind them. Matt was all but blind in the dark, squinting painfully at the sharp flashes that made trees stand out starkly for an instant. Rand led him by the hand, but Matt still felt out each step uncertainly. Worry creased Rand's forehead. If Matt did not regain his sight, they would be slowed to a crawl. They would never get away. Matt seemed to sense his thought. Despite the hood of his cloak, the rain had plastered Matt's hair across his face.
Rand, he said, you won't leave me, will you? If I can't keep up?
His voice quavered.
I won't leave you.
Rand tightened his grip on his friend's hand.
I won't leave you no matter what. Light, help us.
Thunder crashed overhead and Matt stumbled, almost falling, almost pulling him down too.
We have to stop, Matt. If we keep going, you'll break a leg. Goad.
Lightning split the dark right above them as Matt spoke, and the thunder crack pounded every other sound into the ground. But in the flash, Rand could make out the name on Matt's lips.
He's dead. He has to be. Light, let him be dead.
He led Matt to some bushes the lightning flash had showed him. They had leaves enough to give a little shelter from the driving rain. Not as much as a good tree might, but he did not want to risk another lightning strike. They might not be so lucky next time. Huddled together beneath the bushes, they tried to arrange their cloaks to make a little tent over the branches. It was far too late to think of staying dry, but just stopping the incessant pelting of the raindrops would be something. They crouched against each other to share what little body warmth was left to them. Dripping wet as they were, and more drips coming through the cloaks, they shivered themselves into sleep. Rand knew right away it was a dream. He was back in Four Kings, but the town was empty except for him. The wagons were there, but no people, no horses, no dogs. Nothing alive. He knew someone was waiting for him, though. As he walked down the rutted street, the buildings seemed to blur as they slid behind him. When he turned his head, they were all there, solid, but the indistinctness remained at the corners of his vision. It was as if only what he saw really existed, and then just while he was seeing. He was sure if he turned quickly enough, he would see. He was not sure what, but it made him uneasy thinking about it. The dancing cartman appeared in front of him. Somehow its garish paint seemed gray and lifeless. He went in. Goad was there at a table. He recognized the man from his clothes, his silk and dark velvets. Goad's skin was red, burned and cracked and oozing. His face was almost a skull, his lips shriveled to bare teeth and gums. As Goad turned his head, some of his hair cracked off, powdering to soot when it hit his shoulder. His lidless eyes stared at Rand.
So you are dead, Rand said.
He was surprised that he was not afraid. Perhaps it was knowing that it was a dream this time.
Yes, said Balsamon's voice. But he did find you for me. That deserves some reward, don't you think?
Rand turned and discovered he could be afraid, even knowing it was a dream. Balsamon's clothes were the color of dried blood, and rage and hate and triumph battled on his face.
You see, youngling, you cannot hide from me forever. One way or another I find you. What protects you also makes you vulnerable. One time you hide, the next you light a signal fire. Come to me, youngling.
He held out his hand to Rand.
If my hounds must pull you down, they may not be gentle. They are jealous of what you will be once you have knelt at my feet. It is your destiny. You belong to me.
Goad's burned tongue made an angry, eager garble of sound. Rand tried to wet his lips, but he had no spit in his mouth.
No,
he managed, and then the words came more easily.
I belong to myself, not to you, not ever. Myself. If your dark friends kill me, you'll never have me.
The fires in Balsamon's face heated the room till the air swam.
Alive or dead, youngling, you are mine. The grave belongs to me. Easier dead, but better alive. Better for you, youngling. The living have more power in most things.
Goad made a gabbling sound again.
Yes, my good hound. Here is your reward.
Rand looked at Goad just in time to see the man's body crumble to dust. For an instant, the burned face held a look of sublime joy that turned to horror in the final moment, as if he had seen something waiting he did not expect. Goad's empty velvet garments settled on the chair and the floor among the ash. When he turned back, Balsamon's outstretched hand had become a fist.
You are mine, youngling, alive or dead. The eye of the world will never serve you. I mark you as mine.
His fist opened and a ball of flame shot out. It struck Rand in the face, exploding, searing. Rand lurched awake in the dark, water dripping through the cloaks onto his face. His hand trembled as he touched his cheeks. The skin felt tender, as if sunburned. Suddenly he realized Matt was twisting and moaning in his sleep. He shook him, and Matt came awake with a whimper.
My eyes! Oh, light, my eyes! He took my eyes!
Rand held him close, cradling him against his chest as if he were a baby.
You're all right, Matt. You're all right. He can't hurt us. We won't let him.
He could feel Matt shaking, sobbing into his coat.
He can't hurt us, he whispered, and wished he believed it. What protects you makes you vulnerable. I am going mad.
Just before first light, the downpour dwindled, the last drizzle fading as dawn came. The clouds remained, threatening until well into the morning. The wind came up then, driving the clouds off to the south, bearing a warmthless sun and slicing through their dripping wet clothes. They had not slept again, but groggily they donned their cloaks and set off eastward, Rand leading Matt by the hand. After a while, Matt even felt well enough to complain about what the rain had done to his bowstring. Rand would not let him stop to exchange it for a dry string from his pocket, though. Not yet. They came on another village shortly after midday. Rand shivered harder at the sight of snug brick houses and smoke rising from chimneys, but he kept clear, leading Matt through the woods and fields to the south. A lone farmer working with a spading fork in a muddy field was the only person he saw, and he took care that the man did not see them, crouching through the trees. The farmer's attention was all on his work, but Rand kept one eye on him till he was lost to sight. If any of Goad's men were alive, perhaps they would believe he and Matt had taken the southern road out of Four Kings when they could not find anyone who had seen them in this village. They came back to the road, out of sight of the town, and walked their clothes, if not dry, at least to just damp. An hour beyond the town, a farmer gave them a ride in his half-empty haywain. Rand had been taken by surprise while lost in worry about Matt. Matt shielded his eyes from the sun with his hand, weak as the afternoon light was, squinting through slitted lids even so, and he muttered continually about how bright the sun was. When Rand heard the rumble of the haywain, it was too late already. The sodden road deadened sound, and the wagon with its two-horse hitch was only 50 yards behind them, the driver already peering at them. To Rand's surprise, he drew up and offered them a lift. Rand hesitated, but it was too late to avoid being seen, and refusing a ride might fix them in the man's mind. He helped Matt up to the seat beside the farmer, then climbed up behind him. Albert Mull was a stolid man, with a square face and square hands, both worn and grooved from hard work and worry, and he wanted someone to talk to. His cows had gone dry, his chickens had stopped laying, and there was no pasture worth the name. For the first time in memory, he had had to buy hay, and half a wagon was all Old Bane would let him have. He wondered whether there was any chance of getting hay on his own land this year, or any kind of crop.
"A queen should do something, the light illuminer," he muttered,
knuckling his forehead respectfully but absentmindedly. He hardly looked at Rand or Matt, but when he let them down by the narrow, rail-lined track that led off to his farm, he hesitated, then said, almost as if to himself,
"I don't know what you're running from, and I don't want to. I have a wife and children, you understand? My family. It's hard times for helping strangers."
Matt tried to stick his hand under his coat, but Rand had his wrist and he held on. He stood in the road, looking at the man without speaking.
"If I was a good man," Maul said, "I'd offer a couple of lads soaked to their skin a place to dry out and get warm in front of my fire. But it's hard times, and strangers, I don't know what you're running from, and I don't want to. You understand? My family."
Suddenly, he pulled two long woolen scarves, dark and thick, out of his coat pocket.
"It's not much, but here. Belong to my boys. They have others. You don't know me, understand? It's hard times."
"We never even saw you," Rand agreed as he took the scarves. "You are a good man. The best we've met in days."
The farmer looked surprised, then grateful. Gathering his reins, he turned his horses down the narrow lane. Before he completed the turn, Rand was leading Matt on down the Camlin Road. The wind stiffened as dusk closed in. Matt began to ask querulously when they were going to stop, but Rand kept moving, pulling Matt behind him, searching for more shelter than a spot under a hedge. With their clothes still clammy and the wind getting colder by the minute, he was not sure they could survive another night in the open. Night fell without him spotting anything useful. The wind grew icy, beating his cloak. Then, through the darkness ahead, he saw lights. A village. His hand slipped into his pocket, feeling the coins there. More than enough for a meal and a room for the two of them. A room out of the cold night. If they stayed in the open, in the wind and cold and damp clothes, anyone who found them would likely as not find only two corpses. They just had to keep from attracting any more notice than they could help. No playing the flute, and with his eyes, Matt certainly could not juggle. He grasped Matt's hand again and set out toward the beckoning lights.
"When are we going to stop?" Matt asked again.
The way he peered ahead, with his head stuck forward, Rand was not sure if Matt could see him, much less the village lights.
"When we're somewhere warm," he replied.
Pools of light from house windows lit the streets of the town, and people walked them unconcerned with what might be out in the dark. The only inn was a sprawling building, all on one floor, with the look of having had rooms added in bunches over the years without any particular plan. The front door opened to let someone out, and a wave of laughter rolled out after him. Rand froze in the street, the drunken laughter at the dancing cartman echoing in his head. He watched the man go down the street with a none-too-steady stride, then took a deep breath and pushed the door open. He took care that his cloak covered his sword. Laughter swept over him. Lamps hanging from the high ceiling made the room bright, and right away he could see and feel the difference from Samuel Haxian. There was no drunkenness here, for one thing. The room was filled with people who looked to be farmers and townsmen, if not entirely sober, not too far from it. The laughter was real, if a bit forced around the edges. People laughing to forget their troubles, but with true mirth in it, too. The common room itself was neat and clean, and warm from a fire roaring in a big fireplace at the far end. The serving maids' smiles were as warm as the fire, and when they laughed, Rand could tell it was because they wanted to. The innkeeper was as clean as his inn, with a gleaming white apron around his bulk. Rand was glad to see he was a stout man. He doubted if he would ever again trust his skinny innkeeper. His name was Rulon Alwine, a good omen, Rand thought, with so much of the sound of Emmons Field to it. And he eyed them up and down, then politely mentioned paying in advance.
"Not suggesting you're the sort, understand, but there's some on the road these days aren't too particular about paying up come morning. Seems to be a lot of young folks headed for Camlin."
Rand was not offended, not as damp and bedraggled as he was. When Master Alwine mentioned the price, though, his eyes widened, and Matt made a sound as if he had choked on something. The innkeeper's jowls swung as he shook his head regretfully, but he seemed to be used to it.
"Times are hard," he said in a resigned voice. "There isn't much, and what there is costs 5 times what it used to. It'll be more next month. I'll lay oath on it.
Rand dug his money out and looked at Matt. Matt's mouth tightened stubbornly.
You want to sleep under a hedge? Rand asked.
Matt sighed and reluctantly emptied his pocket. When the reckoning was paid, Rand grimaced at the little that remained to divide with Matt. But 10 minutes later, they were eating stew at a table in a corner near the fireplace, pushing it under their spoons with chunks of bread. The portions were not as large as Rand could have wished, but they were hot and filling. Warmth from the hearth seeped into him slowly. He pretended to keep his eyes on his plate, but he watched the door intently. Those who came in or went out all looked like farmers, but it was not enough to quiet his fear. Matt ate slowly, savoring each bite, though he muttered about the light from the lamps. After a time, he dug out the scarf Albert Mull had given him and wound it around his forehead, pulling it down until his eyes were almost hidden. That got them some looks Rand wished they could have avoided. He cleaned his plate hurriedly, urging Matt to do the same, then asked Master Allwine for their room. The innkeeper seemed surprised that they were retiring so early, but he made no comment. He got a candle and showed them through a jumble of corridors to a small room with two narrow beds back in a far corner of the inn. When he left, Rand dropped his bundles beside his bed, tossed his cloak over a chair, and fell on the coverlet fully dressed. All of his clothes were still damp and uncomfortable, but if they had to run, he wanted to be ready. He left the sword belt on, too, and slept with his hand on the hilt. A rooster crowing jerked him awake in the morning. He lay there, watching dawn lighten the window, and wondered if he dared sleep a little longer. Sleep during daylight, when they could be moving. A yawn made his jaws crack.
"Hey," Matt exclaimed, "I can see!"
He sat up on his bed, squinting around the room.
"Some, anyway. Your face is still a little blurry, but I can tell who you are. I knew I'd be all right. By tonight, I'll see better than you do. Again?"
Rand sprang out of bed, scratching as he scooped up his cloak. His clothes were wrinkled from drying on him while he slept, and they itched.
"We're wasting daylight," he said.
Matt scrambled up as fast as he had. He was scratching, too. Rand did feel good. They were a day away from Four Kings, and none of Goad's men had showed up. A day closer to Camelin, where Moraine would be waiting for them.
She would.
No more worrying about dark friends once they were back with the Aes Sedai in the water. It was strange to be looking forward so much to being with an Aes Sedai.
"Light, when I see Moraine again, I'll kiss her."
He laughed at the thought. He felt good enough to invest some of their dwindling stock of coins in breakfast, a big loaf of bread and a pitcher of milk, cold from the spring house. They were eating in the back of the common room when a young man came in, a village youth by the look of him, with a cocky spring to his walk and twirling a cloth cap, with a feather in it, on one finger. The only other person in the room was an old man sweeping out. He never looked up from his broom. The young man's eyes swept jauntily around the room, but when they lit on Rand and Matt, the cap fell off his finger. He stared at them for a full minute before snatching the cap from the floor, then stared some more, running his fingers through his thick head of dark curls. Finally, he came over to their table, his feet dragging. He was older than Rand, but he stood looking down at them diffidently.
"Mind if I sit down?"
he asked, and immediately swallowed hard as if he might have said the wrong thing. Rand thought he might be hoping to share their breakfast, though he looked able to buy his own. His blue-striped shirt was embroidered around the collar and his dark blue cloak all around the hem. His leather boots had never been near any work that scuffed them, that Rand could see. He nodded to a chair. Matt stared at the fellow as he drew the chair to the table. Rand could not tell if he was glaring or just trying to see clearly. In any case, Matt's frown had an effect. The young man froze halfway to sitting and did not lower himself all the way until Rand nodded again.
"What's your name?" Rand asked.
Call me Peter."
His eyes shifted nervously.
This is not my idea, you understand. I have to do it. I don't want to, but they made me. You have to understand that. I don't—"
Rand was beginning to tense when Matt growled,
"Dark friend."
Peter gave a jerk and half lifted out of his chair, staring wildly around the room as if there were 50 people to overhear. The old man's head was still bent over the broom, his attention on the floor. Peter sat back down and looked from Rand to Matt and back uncertainly.
Sweat beaded on his upper lip. It was accusation enough to make anyone sweat, but he said not a word against it. Rand shook his head slowly. After Goat, he knew that Dark Friends did not necessarily have the dragon's fang on their foreheads, but except for his clothes, this pater could have fit in right in Emmons Field. Nothing about him hinted at murder or worse. Nobody would have remarked him twice. At least Goat had been different.
"Leave us alone," Rand said, "and tell your friends to leave us alone. We want nothing from them, and they'll get nothing from us." "If you don't," Matt added fiercely, "I'll name you for what you are. See what your village friends think of that."
Rand hoped he did not really mean it. That could cause as much trouble for the two of them as it did for Pater. Pater seemed to take the threat seriously. His face grew pale.
I heard what happened at Four Kings. Some of it, anyway. Word travels. We have ways of hearing things, but there's nobody here to trap you. I'm alone, and I just want to talk.
About what? Matt asked at the same time that Rand said, "We're not interested." They looked at each other, and Matt shrugged.
"We're not interested," he said.
Rand gulped the last of the milk and stuffed the heel of his half of the bread into his pocket. With their money almost gone, it might be their next meal.
How to leave the inn?
If Pater discovered that Matt was almost blind, he would tell others. Other dark friends. Once Rand had seen a wolf separate a crippled sheep from the flock. There were other wolves around, and he could neither leave the flock nor get a clear shot with his bow. As soon as the sheep was alone, bleeding with terror, hobbling frantically on three legs, the one wolf chasing it became 10 as if by magic. The memory of it turned his stomach. They could not stay there either. Even if Pater was telling the truth about being alone, how long would he stay that way?
"Time to go, Matt," he said, and held his breath.
As Matt started to stand, he pulled Pater's eyes to himself by leaning forward and saying,
"Leave us alone, dark friend. I won't tell you again. Leave us alone."
Pater swallowed hard and pressed back in his chair. There was no blood left in his face at all. It made Rand think of a murderall. By the time he looked back at Matt, Matt was on his feet, his awkwardness unseen. Rand hastily hung his own saddlebags and other bundles around him, trying to keep his cloak over the sword as he did. Maybe Pater already knew about it. Maybe Goat had told Baalzamon, and Baalzamon had told Pater. But he did not think so. He thought Pater had only the vaguest idea of what had happened in Four Kings. That was why he was so frightened. The comparatively bright outline of the door helped Matt make a beeline for it, if not quickly, then not slow enough to seem unnatural either. Rand followed closely, praying for him not to stumble. He was thankful Matt had a clear, straight path with no tables or chairs in the way. Behind him, Pater suddenly leaped to his feet.
"Wait," he said desperately. "You have to wait."
"Leave us alone," Rand said without looking back.
They were almost to the door, and Rand had not put a foot wrong yet.
"Just listen to me,"
Pater said, and put his hand on Rand's shoulder to stop him. Images spun in his head. The Trolloc Narg leaping at him in his own home. The Murdral threatening at the Stagon Lion and Bearlawn. Half-men everywhere. Fades chasing them to Shadar Logoth. Coming for them in Whitebridge. Dark friends everywhere. He whirled, his hand balling up.
"I said, leave us alone!"
His fist took Pater flush on the nose. The dark friend fell on his bottom and sat there on the floor staring at Rand. Blood trickled from his nose.
"You won't get away," he spat angrily. "No matter how strong you are, the great lord of the dark is stronger. The shadow will swallow you."
There was a gasp from further in the common room and the clatter of a broom handle hitting the floor. The old man with the broom had finally heard. He stood staring wide-eyed at Pater. The blood drained from his wrinkled face, and his mouth worked, but no sound came out. Pater stared back for an instant, then gave a wild curse and sprang to his feet, darting out of the inn and down the street as if starving wolves were at his heels. The old man shifted his attention to Rand and Matt, looking not a whit less frightened. Rand hustled Matt out of the inn and out of the village as fast as he could, listening all the while for a hue and cry that never came, but was no less loud in his ears for that.
"Blood and ashes," Matt growled. "They're always there, always right on our heels. We'll never get away."
"No, they're not," Rand said. "If Baalzamon knew we were here, do you think he'd have left it to that fellow? There'd have been another Goad and 20 or 30 bully boys. They're still hunting. But they won't know until Pater tells them, and maybe he really is alone. He might have to go all the way to Four Kings for all we know. But he said, I don't care. He was unsure which he, Matt, meant, but it changed nothing. We're not going to lie down and let them take us. They got 6 rides, short ones, during the day. A farmer told them that a crazy old man at the inn in Market Sharon was claiming there were dark friends in the village. The farmer could hardly talk for laughing. He kept wiping tears off his cheeks. Dark friends in Market Sharon. It was the best story he had heard since Ackley Farren got drunk and spent the night on the inn roof. Another man, a round-faced wagon wright with tools hanging from the sides of his cart and 2 wagon wheels in the back, told a different story. 20 dark friends had held a gathering in Market Sharon. Men with twisted bodies and the women worse, all dirty and in rags. They could make your knees grow weak and your stomach heave just by looking at you, and when they laughed, the filthy cackles rang in your ears for hours, and your head felt as if it were splitting open. He had seen them himself, just at a distance, far enough off to be safe. If the queen would not do something, then somebody ought to ask the Children of the Light for help. Somebody should do something. It was a relief when the wagon wright let them down. With the sun low behind them, they walked into a small village, much like Market Sharon. The Camlan Road split the town neatly in two, but on both sides of the wide road stood rows of small brick houses with thatched roofs. Webs of vine covered the bricks, though only a few leaves hung on them. The village had one inn, a small place no bigger than the Winespring Inn, with a sign on a bracket out front, creaking back and forth in the wind. The Queen's Man. Strange to think of the Winespring Inn as small. Rand could remember when he thought it was about as big as a building could be. Anything bigger would be a palace. But he had seen a few things now, and suddenly he realized that nothing would look the same to him when he got back home. If you ever do. He hesitated in front of the inn, but even if prices at the Queen's Man were not as high as in Market Sharon, they could not afford a meal or a room, either one. Matt saw where he was looking and patted the pocket where he kept Tom's colored balls. I can see well enough, as long as I don't try to get too fancy. His eyes had been getting better, though he still wore the scarf around his forehead and had squinted whenever he looked at the sky during the day. When Rand said nothing, Matt went on. There can't be dark friends at every inn between here and Camlan. Besides, I don't want to sleep under a bush if I can sleep in a bed. He made no move toward the inn, though, just waiting for Rand. After a moment, Rand nodded. He felt as tired as he had at any time since leaving home. Just thinking of a night in the open made his bones ache. It's all catching up, all the running, all the looking over your shoulder. They can't be everywhere, he agreed. With the first step he took into the common room, he wondered if he had made a mistake. It was a clean place, but crowded. Every table was filled, and some men leaned against the walls because there was nowhere for them to sit. From the way the serving maids scurried between the tables with harried looks, and the landlord, too, it was a larger crowd than they were used to. Too many for this small village. It was easy to pick out the people who did not belong there. They were dressed no differently from the rest, but they kept their eyes on their food and drink. The locals watched the strangers as much as anything else. A drone of conversation hung in the air, enough that the innkeeper took them into the kitchen when Rand made him understand that they needed to talk to him. The noise was almost as bad there, with the cook and his helpers banging pots and darting about. The innkeeper mopped his face with a large handkerchief.
I suppose you're on your way to Camlan to see the false dragon like every other fool in the realm. Well, it's 6 to a room and 2 or 3 to a bed, and if that doesn't suit, I've nothing for you.
Rand gave his spiel with a feeling of queasiness. With so many people on the road, every other one could be a dark friend, and there was no way to pick them out from the rest. Matt demonstrated his juggling, he kept it to 3 balls, and was careful even then, and Rand took out Tom's flute. After only a dozen notes of the old black bear, the innkeeper nodded impatiently.
You'll do. I need something to take those idiots' minds off this Loghain. There's been 3 fights already over whether or not he's really the dragon. Stow your things in the corner, and I'll go clear a space for you. If there's any room to. Fools. The world's full of fools who don't know enough to stay where they belong. That's what's causing all the trouble. People who won't stay where they belong.
Mopping his face again, he hurried out of the kitchen, muttering under his breath.
The cook and his helpers ignored Rand and Matt. Matt kept adjusting the scarf around his head, pushing it up, then blinking at the light and tugging it back down again. Rand wondered if he could see well enough to do anything more complicated than juggle three balls. As for himself, the queasiness in his stomach grew thicker. He dropped on a low stool, holding his head in his hands. The kitchen felt cold. He shivered. Steam filled the air. Stoves and ovens crackled with heat. His shivers became stronger, his teeth chattering. He wrapped his arms around himself, but it did no good. His bones felt as if they were freezing. Dimly, he was aware of Matt asking him something, shaking his shoulder, and of someone cursing and running out of the room. Then the innkeeper was there, with the cook frowning at his side, and Matt was arguing loudly with them both. He could not make out any of what they said. The words were a buzz in his ears, and he could not seem to think at all. Suddenly, Matt took his arm, pulling him to his feet. All of their things, saddlebags, blanket rolls, Tom's bundled cloak and instrument cases, hung from Matt's shoulders with his bow. The innkeeper was watching them, wiping his face anxiously. Weaving, more than half supported by Matt, Rand let his friend steer him toward the back door.
Sorry, Matt,
he managed. He could not stop his teeth from chattering.
Must have been the rain. One night out won't hurt, I guess.
Twilight darkened the sky, spotted by a handful of stars.
Not a bit of it, Matt said.
He was trying to sound cheerful, but Rand could hear the hidden worry.
He was scared the other folk would find out there was somebody sick in his inn. I told him if he kicked us out, I'd take you into the common room. That'd empty half his rooms in 10 minutes. For all his talk about fools, he doesn't want that. Then where?
Here, Matt said, pulling open the stable door with a loud creak of hinges. It was darker inside than out, and the air smelled of hay and grain and horses, with a strong undersmell of manure. When Matt lowered him to the straw-covered floor, he folded over with his chest on his knees, still hugging himself and shaking from head to toe. All of his strength seemed to go for the shaking. He heard Matt stumble and curse and stumble again, then a clatter of metal. Suddenly light blossomed. Matt held up a battered old lantern. If the inn was full, so was its stable. Every stall had a horse, some raising their heads and blinking at the light. Matt eyed the ladder to the hayloft, then looked at Rand, crouched on the floor, and shook his head.
Never get you up there, Matt muttered.
Hanging the lantern on a nail, he scrambled up the ladder and began tossing down armloads of hay. Hurriedly climbing back down, he made a bed at the back of the stable and got Rand onto it. Matt covered him with both their cloaks, and Rand pushed them off almost immediately.
Hot, he murmured.
Vaguely he knew that he had been cold only a moment before, but now he felt as if he were in an oven. He tugged at his collar, tossing his head.
Hot.
He felt Matt's hand on his forehead.
I'll be right back, Matt said, and disappeared.
He twisted fitfully on the hay, how long he was not sure, until Matt returned with a heaped plate in one hand, a pitcher in the other, and two white cups dangling from fingers by their handles.
There's no wisdom here, he said, dropping to his knees beside Rand.
He filled one of the cups and held it to Rand's mouth. Rand gulped the water down as if he had had nothing to drink in days. That was how he felt.
They don't even know what a wisdom is. What they do have is somebody called Mother Brune, but she's off somewhere birthing a baby, and nobody knows when she'll be back. I did get some bread and cheese and sausage. Good Master Inlow will give us anything as long as we stay out of sight of his guests. Here, try some.
Rand turned his head away from the food. The sight of it, the thought of it, made his stomach heave. After a minute, Matt sighed and settled down to eat himself. Rand kept his eyes averted and tried not to listen. The chills came once more, and then the fever, to be replaced by the chills and the fever again. Matt covered him when he shook and fed him water when he complained of thirst. The night deepened and the stable shifted in the flickering lantern light. Shadows took shape and moved on their own. Then he saw Baalzamon striding down the stable, eyes burning, a murdrol at either side with faces hidden in the depths of their black cowls. Fingers scrabbling for his sword hilt, he tried to get to his feet, yelling,
"Matt! Matt, they're here! Light, they're here!"
Matt jerked awake where he sat cross-legged against the wall.
What? Dark friends? Where? Wavering on his knees, Rand pointed frantically down the stable and gaped. Shadows stirred and a horse stamped in its sleep. Nothing more. He fell back on the straw.
There's nobody but us, Matt said. Here, let me take that.
He reached for Rand's sword belt, but Rand tightened his grip on the hilt.
No. No, I have to keep it. He's my father, you understand? He's my father.
The shivering swept over him once more, but he clung to the sword as if to a lifeline.
My father!
Matt gave up trying to take it and pulled the cloaks back over him. There were other visitations in the night while Matt dozed. Rand was never sure if they were really there or not. Sometimes he looked at Matt, with his head on his chest, wondering if he would see them too if he woke. Egwene stepped out of the shadows, her hair in a long dark braid as it had been in Emmons Field, her face pained and mournful.
Why did you leave us? She asked. We're dead because you left us.
Rand shook his head weakly on the hay.
No, Egwene, I didn't want to leave you. Please. We're all dead,
she said sadly.
And death is the kingdom of the Dark One. The Dark One has us because you abandoned us. No, I had no choice, Egwene. Please, Egwene, don't go. Come back, Egwene.
But she turned into the shadows and was shadow. Moraine's expression was serene, but her face was bloodless and pale. Her cloak might as well have been a shroud, and her voice was a lash.
That is right, Randall Thor. You have no choice. You must go to Tar Valon, or the Dark One will take you for his own. Eternity chained in the shadow. Only Aes Sedai can save you now. Only Aes Sedai.
Tom grinned at him sardonically. The gleeman's clothes hung in charred rags that made him see the flashes of light as Tom wrestled with the fade to give them time to run. The flesh under the rags was blackened and burned.
Trust Aes Sedai, boy, and you'll wish you were dead. Remember, the price of Aes Sedai help is always smaller than you can believe, always greater than you can imagine. And what Aja will find you first, eh? Red? Maybe black. Best to run, boy. Run.
Lan's stare was as hard as granite, and blood covered his face.
Strange to see a Heronmark blade in the hands of a sheepherder. Are you worthy of it? You had better be. You're alone now, nothing to hold to behind you, and nothing before. And anyone can be a dark friend.
He smiled a wolf's smile, and blood poured out of his mouth.
Anyone.
Perrin came, accusing, pleading for help. Mistress Alvear weeping for her daughter, and Bale Doman cursing him for bringing fades down on his vessel, and Master Fitch wringing his hands over the ashes of his inn, and Min screaming in a Trolloc's clutches. People he knew, people he had only met. But the worst was Tam. Tam stood over him, frowning and shaking his head, and said not a word.
You have to tell me, Rand begged him. Who am I? Tell me, please. Who am I? Who am I?
He shouted. Easy, Rand. For a moment he thought it was Tam answering, but then he saw that Tam was gone. Matt bent over him, holding a cup of water to his lips.
Just rest easy. You're Randall Thor, that's who you are, with the ugliest face and the thickest head in the Two Rivers. Hey, you're sweating. The fever's broken.
Randall Thor, Rand whispered. Matt nodded, and there was something so comforting in it that Rand drifted off to sleep without even touching the water. It was a sleep untroubled by dreams, at least by any he remembered, but light enough that his eyes drifted open whenever Matt checked on him. Once he wondered if Matt was getting any sleep at all, but he fell back asleep himself before the thought got very far. The squeal of the door hinges roused him fully, but for a moment he only lay there in the hay, wishing he was still asleep. Asleep, he would not be aware of his body. His muscles ached like wrung-out rags and had about as much strength. Weakly, he tried to raise his head. He made it on the second try. Matt sat in his accustomed place against the wall, within arm's reach of Rand. His chin rested on his chest, which rose and fell in the easy rhythm of deep sleep. The scarf had slipped down over his eyes. Rand looked toward the door. A woman stood there, holding it open with one hand. For a moment, she was only a dark shape in a dress outlined by the faint light of early morning. Then she stepped inside, letting the door swing shut behind her. In the lantern light, he could see her more clearly. She was about the same age as Nynaeve, he thought, but she was no village woman. The pale green silk of her dress shimmered as she moved. Her cloak was a rich, soft gray, and a frothy net of lace caught up her hair. She fingered a heavy gold necklace as she looked thoughtfully at Matt and him.
Matt, Rand said, then louder. Matt!
Matt snorted and almost fell over as he came awake. Scrubbing sleep from his eyes, he stared at the woman.
I came to look at my horse, she said, gesturing vaguely at the stalls.
She never took her eyes away from the two of them, though.
Are you ill?
He's all right, Matt said stiffly. He just caught a chill in the rain, that's all.
Perhaps I should look at him, she said. I have some knowledge.
Rand wondered if she were Aes Sedai. Even more than her clothes, her self-assured manner, the way she held her head as if on the point of giving a command, did not belong here. And if she is Aes Sedai, of what Aja? I'm fine now, he told her. Really, there's no need. But she came down the length of the stable, holding her skirt up and placing her gray slippers gingerly. With a grimace for the straw, she knelt beside him and felt his forehead.
No fever, she said, studying him with a frown.
She was pretty in a sharp-featured fashion, but there was no warmth in her face. It was not cold, either. It just seemed to lack any feeling whatsoever.
You were sick, though. Yes. Yes, and still weak as a day-old kitten. I think...
She reached under her cloak, and suddenly things were happening too fast for Rand to do more than give a strangled shout. Her hand flashed from under her cloak. Something glittered as she lunged across Rand toward Matt. Matt toppled sideways in a flurry of motion, and there was a solid t'chunk of metal driven into wood. It all took just an instant, and then everything was still. Matt lay half on his back, one hand gripping her wrist, just above the dagger she had driven into the wall where his chest had been, his other hand holding the blade from Shadar Logoth to her throat. Moving nothing but her eyes, she tried to look down at the dagger Matt held. Eyes widening, she drew a ragged breath and tried to pull back from it, but he kept the edge against her skin. After that, she was as still as a stone. Licking his lips, Rand stared at the tableau above him. Even if he had not been so weak, he did not believe he could have moved. Then his eyes fell on her dagger, and his mouth went dry. The wood around the blade was blackening. Thin tendrils of smoke rose from the char.
Matt! Matt, her dagger!
Matt flicked a glance at the dagger, then back to the woman, but she had not moved. She was licking her lips nervously. Roughly, Matt pried her hand off the hilt and gave her a push. She toppled back, sprawling away from them and catching herself with her hands behind her, still watching the blade in his hand.
Don't move, he said. I'll use this if you move. Believe me, I will.
She nodded slowly. Her eyes never left Matt's dagger.
Watch her, Rand.
Rand was not sure what he was supposed to do if she tried anything. Shout, maybe. He certainly could not run after her if she tried to flee. But she sat there without twitching while Matt yanked her dagger free of the wall. The black spot stopped growing, though a faint wisp of smoke still trailed up from it. Matt looked around for somewhere to put the dagger, then thrust it toward Rand. He took it gingerly, as if it were a live adder. It looked ordinary, if ornate, with a pale ivory hilt and a narrow, gleaming blade no longer than the palm of his hand. Just a dagger. Only he had seen what it could do. The hilt was not even warm, but his hand began to sweat. He hoped he did not drop it in the hay. The woman did not move from her sprawl as she watched Matt slowly turn toward her. She watched him as if wondering what he would do next, but Rand saw the sudden tightening of Matt's eyes, the tightening of his hand on the dagger.
Matt, no! She tried to kill me, Rand. She'd have killed you, too. She's a dark friend,
Matt spat the word.
But we're not, Rand said.
The woman gasped as if she had just realized what Matt had intended.
We are not, Matt.
For a moment, Matt remained frozen, the blade in his fist catching the lantern light. Then he nodded.
"Move over there,"
he told the woman, gesturing with the dagger toward the door to the tack room. She got to her feet slowly, pausing to brush the straw from her dress. Even when she started in the direction Matt indicated, she moved as if there were no reason to hurry. But Rand noticed that she kept a wary eye on the ruby-hilted dagger in Matt's hand.
"You really should stop struggling," she said. "It would be for the best in the end. You will see."
"The best," Matt said wryly, rubbing his chest where her blade would have gone if he had not moved.
"Get over there."
She gave a casual shrug as she obeyed.
"A mistake. There has been considerable confusion since what happened with that egotistical fool Goad, not to mention whoever the idiot was who started the panic in Market Sharon. No one is sure what happened there or how. That makes it more dangerous for you, don't you see? You will have honored places if you come to the great lord of your own free will. But as long as you run, there will be pursuit. And who can tell what will happen then?"
Rand felt a chill. "My hounds are jealous and may not be gentle."
"So you're having trouble with a couple of farm boys?" Matt's laugh was grim. "Maybe you dark friends aren't as dangerous as I've always heard."
He flung open the door of the tack room and stepped back. She paused just through the doorway, looking at him over her shoulder. Her gaze was ice, and her voice colder still.
"You will find out how dangerous we are when the Murdral gets here."
Whatever else she had to say was cut off as Matt slammed the door and pulled the bar down into its brackets. When he turned, his eyes were worried.
"Fade,"
he said in a tight voice, tucking the dagger back under his coat.
"Coming here, she says. How are your legs?"
"I can't dance," Rand muttered, "but if you'll help me get on my feet, I can walk." He looked at the blade in his hand and shuddered.
"Blood and ashes, I'll run."
Hurriedly hanging himself about with their possessions, Matt pulled Rand to his feet. Rand's legs wobbled and he had to lean on his friend to stay upright, but he tried not to slow Matt down. He held the woman's dagger well away from himself. Outside the door was a bucket of water. He tossed the dagger into it as they passed. The blade entered the water with a hiss. Steam rose from the surface. Grimacing, he tried to take faster steps. With light come, there were plenty of people in the streets, even so early. They were about their own business, though, and no one had any attention to spare for two young men walking out of the village, not with so many strangers about. Just the same, Rand stiffened every muscle, trying to stand straight. With each step, he wondered if any of the folk hurrying by were dark friends. Any of them waiting for the woman with the dagger, for the fade. A mile outside the village, his strength gave out. One minute he was panting along, hanging on Matt, the next they were both on the ground. Matt tugged him over to the side of the road.
"We have to keep going," Matt said.
He scrubbed his hand through his hair, then tugged the scarf down above his eyes.
"Sooner or later, somebody will let her out, and they'll be after us again."
"I know," Rand panted. "I know. Give me a hand."
Matt pulled him up again, but he wavered there, knowing it was no good. The first time he tried to take a step, he would be flat on his face again. Holding him upright, Matt waited impatiently for a horse cart approaching from the village to pass them. Matt gave a grunt of surprise when the cart slowed to a stop before them. A leathery-faced man looked down from the driver's seat.
"Something wrong with him?" the man asked around his pipe.
"He's just tired," Matt said.
Rand could see that was not going to do, not leaning on Matt the way he was. He let go of Matt and took a step away from him. His legs quivered, but he willed himself to stay erect.
"I haven't slept in 2 days," he said. "Ate something that made me sick. I'm better now, but I haven't slept."
The man blew a streamer of smoke from the corner of his mouth.
"Going to Camelin, are you? Was your age, I expect I might be off to see this false dragon myself."
"Yes," Matt nodded. "That's right. We're going to see the false dragon."
"Yeah, climb on up then. Your friend in the back. If he's sick again, best it's on the straw, not up here." Name's Chaim Kinch.